Campus FM presents Talking Heads Season 3, brought to you by students of the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change.
Hello and welcome to Talking Heads Season 3. We are very happy to have you listen to us again in this episode today about sustainability and how we humans can work towards securing the future of this beautiful planet. I am Katrin Movius and I'm very glad to have gotten the chance to work together with an absolutely fantastic team for this episode, Anna Marie Carmen, who will introduce themselves shortly so you get to hear their wonderful voices as well.
Oh, well, you're so kind, Catherine. Thank you so much. My name is Mari Carmen Rodriguez. I'm from Monterrey, Mexico, the border with the United States. Don't ask me about Donald Trump, please. Now, I was interested and participated on this environmental episode because, unfortunately, in my country, we don't have many policies to protect the environment, which is unacceptable, especially considering that in Mexico, more than 100 tons of garbage are generated every day. Mm-hmm. So, therefore, I wanted to know what people and institutions are doing here in Europe to protect the environment so I can share it with my community back home.
That's a great reason. Yeah. Thank you, Mary. How about you, Anna?
Hi, everybody. I'm Anna from Russia. 10 years ago, I decided to become a vegetarian and subsequently a vegan to follow a cruelty-free lifestyle. I strongly believe that humans should coexist with nature rather than exploit it. It stimulated me to start learning more about the environmental issues, which seem to be burning but neglected in Russia. Here in Malta, I got deep understanding of environmental problems and possible solutions from my colleagues, experts, and ordinary like-minded people. And I'm really glad to be here with you.
Thank you. And didn't I tell you, they were absolutely wonderful people.
Thank you.
We're all students here at the University of Malta as part of the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change, as you might remember from the last episode. One interesting way of how you can make people learn something is through narratives and stories. For that reason, we are bringing a little short story to you today, read by the wonderful voice of Jordan Edwards.
Woohoo!
Once upon a time, there was a wise man who used to go to the ocean to do his writing. He had a habit of walking on the beach before he began his work. One day, as he was walking along the shore, he looked down the beach and saw a human figure moving like a dancer. He smiled to himself at the thought of someone who would dance to the day, and so he walked faster to catch up. As he got closer, he noticed that the figure was that of a young man, and that what he was doing was not dancing at all. The young man was reaching down to the shore, picking up small objects and throwing them into the ocean. He came closer still and called out, "Good morning. May I ask what it is that you are doing?" The young man paused, looked up, and replied, "Throwing starfish into the ocean." "I must ask then, why are you throwing starfish into the ocean?" asked the somewhat startled wise man. To this, the young man replied, "The sun is up and the tide is going out. If I don't throw them in, they'll die." Upon hearing this, the wise man commented, "But young man, do you not realize that there are miles and miles of beach and there are starfish all along every mile? You can't possibly make a difference." At this, the young man bent down, picked up yet another starfish and threw it into the ocean. As it met the water, he said, "It made a difference for that one."
Well, that story beautifully shows how every step we take to protect the planet we are depending on can make a big difference. In this episode, we want to discuss some of the most pressing environmental issues and what we can do about it. There are so many issues that sometimes we lose track of all the things going on and what the most pressing things are. We think about recycling or turning off the lights and lose track of the things that endanger our planet and therefore our lives most. This is why today we would like to talk to you about the 9 planetary boundaries and, more specifically, the 4 we have already gone past. So, Catherine, what do you know about this? What do you know about the 9 planetary boundaries?
Yeah, I've actually read a bit about this. So the 9 planetary boundaries were established by a Swedish researcher called, I don't know if I pronounce it correctly, Johan Rockström. Mm. And they basically tried to find out, what do we have to do to stay in the nice environment that we actually live in, because we're actually very lucky to live in this time. There's no ice, there's no low temperatures, there's no super high temperatures. We're actually living in a really good time
good
right now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they kind of tried to investigate what do we need to do to stay in this time. And they found 9 planetary boundaries that we have to stay within to secure this safe space. And more shockingly, they found that we've actually crossed 4 of those boundaries. So we've gone beyond limits they established.
Yeah, okay. So, Catherine, what do you know about the 4 planetary boundaries that we already passed?
Yeah, these 4 boundaries are climate change. So we have put too much carbon emissions in the air. So, you know, about greenhouse gases, so the planet is heating up. And then the second one is deforestation. So we have cut down too many trees, taking part of the planet's ability to provide us with oxygen away.
Yeah.
And another one is biodiversity. So we have caused too much extinction and too much loss of biodiversity by, for example, deforesting the Amazon forests and things like that.
Yeah, and indeed, that's a very modern topic nowadays. It's a trend topic in Facebook and WhatsApp. You can see a lot of people sharing pictures about animals that are about to...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then not only that, we've already, and that's the 4th boundary, we have gone beyond levels of chemicals in the ground that are mostly used as fertilizers.
Yeah.
They're nitrogen and phosphorus, and we put them into the ground to make our plants grow faster. But that most of that we've put in the ground doesn't end up in the plants actually, but it goes straight into the water, straight into the sea, endangering the fragile balance of the life in the water and in the sea.
And, well, I wonder what the consequences of crossing these boundaries are for the humanity.
That is difficult to say. You can't really predict those consequences 100%. But if you just look around and look at the news, I mean, there's cyclones, there's storms, there's droughts, there's floodings. It's crazy. And we should do everything to protect our planet to not make that happen even more. Now, you might be wondering, why exactly is it important to protect biodiversity? How did we put so much carbon emissions into the air? What are we using all the land for? While there are no direct and 100% answers to this, we are very happy to have with us today 2 of our colleagues from the Master's Program in Adult Education for Social Change, who can tell you a bit more about these issues. Welcome, Molly and Anya.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So Anya Benavides is from Hawaii, and she's been very interested and knows a lot about the fragile balance of marine life and the importance of healthy oceans for our planet. While Molly, also originally from the US, but now a Londoner, has always been, or not always, but for a long time, been an activist dealing with environmental issues in daily life, including being vegan and avoiding plastic waste. So we are very happy to have the 2 of you here today. So, Anya, first question for you. Could you explain to us what biodiversity means and how it relates to us?
So, biodiversity is pretty much essential for everything that we find important, and it's needed for any kind of thriving environment. Within biodiversity, you have species, ecosystems, and genetic diversity. Mm-hmm. So diversity in all of these fields is very important. For example, with genetic diversity, if you have more species, then there's more fight against diseases, and there's more genetic variation, which is important for any environment. And it's used in everything we eat. Pretty much every product we use comes back to biodiversity.
Yeah, and even our own health, I think we learn a lot from nature.
Yeah, exactly.
From biodiversity. As you're also very knowledgeable concerning aspects of marine life, why is biodiversity so important there?
Well, it comes back to everything again. So coral reefs are important for the food we eat, jobs we have, coastal protection even from storms and erosion.
So what coastal protection, what is that exactly?
Basically, it protects against waves, so there would probably be a lot more flooding without reefs, and storms would have more damage.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned to me one time that coral reefs are also used in health products and finding medicines and things like that.
Yeah, so they're actually very important right now with the advancement of looking for cures for human illnesses, Alzheimer's, cancer, arthritis, and more. And it's because they're used to fighting off so many diseases, and they're naturally safe.
Yeah, and I think coral reefs provide like an environment for a lot of fish and other sea animals where they live in and things like that, right? As far as I know, like they're like the forest of the sea.
Yeah, exactly. So they're fundamental for a lot of species. So for example, if you eat tuna or deep sea tuna, a lot of them go to coral reefs and they feed off of this mucus that hard corals secrete, and mm-hmm. they grow there until they're old enough to go back out into the open ocean. Turtles, oh, wow. The reefs are essential for a lot of species.
Yeah. Well, I think that really shows how everything ties together, and how fragile that balance is, and how things that we don't even know we need, we actually do need. What would be things that we can do to protect that fragile balance, Anya?
I think just recognizing, and this is growing for me too, recognizing that everything we do has an effect. So for example, the greenhouse gases that we produce go back to affecting the reef. So as the air temperature rises, the water temperature also rises. And when the water temperature rises, a lot of corals are at risk of bleaching. And what bleaching is when corals lose these photosynthetic algae that live inside of them, mm-hmm. called zooxanthellae, and they basically need them to eat. Mm-hmm. So coral bleaching is when their zooxanthellae get too warm and they leave. Mm-hmm. And it would basically be like if our mouths were sewed shut and then we were expected to eat. So basically we couldn't eat, and they can survive for a while, but if the zooxanthellae don't come back, then they're at risk of losing complete colonies of coral. So it's very important.
Yeah. So the ocean is really important in general as well. I also read that the ocean and all the, correct me if I pronounce it wrong, the phytoplankton, is that?
Phytoplankton, yeah.
The phytoplankton are tiny plants that live in the ocean, and actually they account for 50 to 80% of the oxygen in the world. So if we don't protect our oceans, we might actually not have enough oxygen at some point. Same thing goes for life on the land. So if we don't protect the life on the land and the ecosystems on the land, if we keep cutting trees, we will eventually have less sources of oxygen. Which brings us to another one of the boundaries that we have crossed, namely the overuse of land. 26% of the planet's ice-free land is used for growing livestock, which is already a lot. That's more than a quarter. And then another 33% is used for growing food to feed that livestock. So more than half of the fertile land is going into that. So I know that Molly and Anna are quite knowledgeable about these issues, so let's hear what they have to say.
Well, yes, Catherine, thank you very much. Being a vegetarian for more than 10 years, with a subsequent move to a vegan diet, I see that people go vegan for a number of reasons. Having started my vegetarian and vegan diets primarily for ethical reasons, in the course of time, I realized that apart from cruelty-free and health aspects, there must be one more significant reason, which is often ignored and neglected, the impact of meat and dairy production on the environment. Eating animals is the largest contributing factor in habitat loss and extinction. First, producing meat requires large amounts of land to raise animals on. Every second, an area of rainforest, equivalent to a football field, is cleared to rear and graze animals.
Well, that's a lot.
Yeah. Overall, it's estimated that following a meat diet requires 3 times more land than is needed for a plant-based diet. As a full-time vegan, Molly, was that one of the reasons why you stopped eating animal products?
Well, actually, so I'm quite new to the whole vegetarian and vegan thing. I've been vegan for about a year and a half now, but I wasn't vegetarian before I went vegan. I went from eating everything, so being an omnivore, to a vegan diet. And actually, initially, it was just for health reasons. But, you know, as soon as I did go vegan, then I started paying more attention to what other vegans were talking about and why they were vegan and their experiences. So, pretty quickly I realized the environmental impact of meat and dairy industries. And, you know, I was just shocked. I think most people are when they find that out for the first time, because it's not something that we talk about a lot. Especially in the U.S. where I'm from, meat and dairy is a huge part of our life. It's a huge part of our culture. Mm-hmm. And so I think going against that cultural expectation of eating meat and dairy is quite shocking to people. And so people don't really like hearing this. You know, people are now really into recycling and trying to protect the planet in other ways. But if you tell them to stop eating meat and dairy, it's quite shocking. So yeah, finding out about that was a huge reason for me staying vegan. You know, that was a big part of my learning about veganism and stuff. And so now, you know, I try to talk about it with people more, because I think it's one of those things that if more people knew about, they'd be much more interested in learning more about veganism.
Which is exactly why we invited you here.
Yeah, that's great. That's great to learn about your radical but very inspiring change. And I'm sure it will motivate some of our listeners as well, yeah. However, many people argue that we cannot get all the required nutrients from plant-based foods. Molly, what is your attitude to this argument, and do you face any health problems in regard to this issue?
Yeah, so I think probably since going vegan, one of the most common things I hear is, what about protein? Mm-hmm. Which is a very common thing that all vegans, I'm sure you've heard it a million times. And the answer to that is, it's just not an issue. You know, as I said, I initially did go vegan for my health because I was getting sick from eating partially from eating dairy. Mm-hmm. And most people in the world are actually partially or fully lactose intolerant. So, you know, just that alone is a good switch for a lot of people. But I think a lot of people forget that animals don't create protein. Animals mm-hmm. get protein from plants. So, you know, the cows that people are eating and the chickens, whatever, are eating this food and they're processing it in their bodies. But you can get all of the nutrients, all of the protein, all of the vitamins and minerals that you need, excluding maybe B12, which is an easy supplement to get, from plants. So, you know, a vegan diet can be one of the most healthy diets. Obviously, you can, you know, just eat junk food and be unhealthy, but I've never faced any issues with my diet and with nutrition. It is, you know, if you just are interested in looking into it, plants have pretty much everything you could need, and it's quite easy, actually, as a vegan to have a really full balanced diet and to be even healthier than you were before.
Yeah, you're right. I can only support you here. And the next issue I would like to discuss with you is the impact of animal agriculture on greenhouse gas emissions. Do you know that livestock and their byproducts account for 51% of annual worldwide greenhouse gas emissions? Molly, how do you think people should be informed about the consequences of meat consumption?
Yeah, you know, I think it is kind of a tricky problem because right now, climate change is a huge issue globally, you know, with the Paris Accords and the recent UN report coming out about climate change. So it is something that everyone is now talking about. But I think it's a lot easier to talk about climate change than it is to talk about people's individual diets, which is something that's very personal. So I think a huge part of it is destigmatizing veganism as a concept and also just making people's plates something that you can talk about without feeling like it's an attack on traditions and your own culture. Because as you've clearly showed all of us, they're tied together, you know. So we can't really combat climate change unless we change people's attitudes about food. So I think there's a lot of really good information out there. There's great documentaries. There's just fantastic resources available online as well. But I think we really have to just start talking about it. Veganism can be a scary word for a lot of people. So I think a huge part is just trying to make that more approachable and learning to talk to each other and figure out how we can make this something that is not so scary and that we can fix so that we can work on climate change.
Yeah, well, education is the key word here. I could not say it better.
Definitely.
So thank you again very much to our guests, Molly and Anya, for providing some valuable information on the impact we have on our planet. We were also interested what people in Malta think about environmental issues and conducted a few interviews with people living here, right, Mary?
Yes, and indeed we noticed some people in Malta are really concerned about the environment. For instance, we can listen to Vasil from Oman and Samuel and Janet from Malta, who share with us what they and their families do to protect the environment. So let's hear what they have to say.
I do recycling. I mean, we separate waste, organic, plastic, and the mixed waste. So we try to help.
At home, the appliances that we use, we turn them off. We don't use, we turn them off. So don't waste energy. We also have PV panels. The government has subsidized these, and we bought them.
I try to recycle and stuff like that. I try not to litter as much as possible. And when I see something like a bottle on the floor, I pick it up and throw it in the trash.
So as we just heard, they recycle, they try to clean the streets, and they even have photovoltaic panels at home for solar energy. In fact, fortunately nowadays, many houses here in Malta are using the system. Not to be confused with the solar thermal systems that are used to produce hot water. Those are kind of different. So in this way, people in Malta, as you can see, seem to be working towards the protection of the environment.
Yeah, Mary, that's absolutely true. I can comment here that apart from recycling, a lot of locals try to use public transport instead of cars, as well as buy less plastic products and unnecessary clothes in everyday life to reduce harmful impact on the environment. Let's listen to what they say in this regard.
I recycle. I use reusable makeup remover. Like, I have a cotton makeup remover and I just use it more than once, even for removing nail polish. I use pieces of cloth instead of, you know, tearing cotton wool every time or something like that.
I recycle and I carry around the fork and not use plastic forks.
So I have delayed driving by a few years. I haven't started learning and I don't need to learn to drive now. That saves some CO2. And I'm trying to go vegetarian. Mm-hmm. I have reduced the amount of meat I eat, for sure, but I haven't reached the point of being full vegetarian. I have also made it a point to reduce the number of plastics I use and to reuse everything I can. And even I do still consume, but I consume less than I used to. So even in terms of clothes, I'd rather buy a few items that I'd wear than 20 clothes, like 20 tops, which I only wear once.
In my opinion, such individual efforts are already halfway to success.
Yeah, that's true. Now, we also asked some people what they consider the government or even themselves can do to protect the environment, and their answers were varied.
Everything is already packed in plastic, ready. For example, the carrots. There's the ones that are you can pick and put in your own bag, and the ones already packed in plastic. So there's those things which sometimes I can't avoid, I can avoid, but yeah, that's my contribution.
Fix public transport, make it more efficient, increase the quality, because most of the cars are all let down, most of them, and make them come on time.
I think mainly transport, because there's a lot of pollution, and even the air quality, they said, like, it went down.
So, obviously, cars pollution is a big concern for people living in Malta, which is not surprising considering the amount of cars we can easily see here. Then one possible solution can be to improve public transport in all senses so they do not pollute as they do right now and people can stop using personal cars. Right, Anna?
Indeed. It is obvious that these personal contributions are not enough for changing the overall situation until the most burning issues and real dangers are collectively addressed and supported at the government level. Let's see what our interviewees say in this regard.
I think there just has to be more awareness. I think so.
We have made some progress on renewable energy. We have 7.8% is now derived from renewable energy, but that is below our 2020 target and below what we have to do to reach the Paris Climate Accord or protect the climate for future generations. In other aspects, we are not sustainable. We are dependent on imports for food, which means we are very dependent on external political factors or social factors, and we are very dependent on the weather in Sicily. For example, if there was a drought, that would increase food prices locally. And other aspects, we do have 13% of the island is protected under Natura 2000 framework, although there is some criticism that those are just paper parks without any real legislation or any real environmental protection. We still have hunting, we still have trapping, which is even worse. So we have made a baby step forward, but we really have a lot to do.
So, imported food, serious climate changes, hunting and trapping are among the most burning issues to be taken under control. And of course, raising people's awareness of the existing problems, which can be achieved through education.
So yes, education is key, as we've already noticed a few times in this episode. So Maltese people and people living in Malta are developing more and more awareness towards environmental issues. Let's hope that this awareness keeps increasing, as Malta is an island and climate change in Europe will affect islands more than other parts, probably. Remember the planetary boundaries we talked about at the beginning? We have crossed four of them, but that doesn't mean it's impossible to take a step back. Here are five things you can do in your daily life to help uncross, more or less, those boundaries and protect the environment.
Okay, number one, to protect all sorts of terrestrial and marine forms of life, cut down on plastic. Reducing and reusing is much more effective than recycling. Bring your own bags when you go shopping, reuse the plastic bags you have, and prioritize glass and paper packaging over plastic.
Number two, try to buy organic products whenever you can. Many conventional pesticides harm the insects that pollinate the plants that we and animals eat. And without pollination, there will hardly be any fruit and vegetables at all. In organic farming, less of those harmful substances are used.
Okay, number three, eat less dairy, meat, and palm oil. Reduce your meat consumption to only two or three times a week, or have a vegan day a few times a month. That will already make a difference, believe me.
Yeah, that's true. Number four, stop using your car for everything. Whenever you can, cycle or use public transport, please.
And number five, this might be the most important thing to do. Take political and communal action. For example, there was a petition in March to make Manuel Island a heritage site, protecting the biodiversity that the island with all its plants and meadows allows. Why don't you follow up on that idea and choose who you vote? Does that person that you're intending to vote for, or that party that you've been voting for the past years, consider the environment? You could write a letter to the Maltese government urging them to improve public transport. You can write or talk to supermarket managers asking them to reduce food waste or plastic. Talk to your family and friends about environmental issues. Raise awareness. There are so many things you can do. Remembering the short story from the beginning of this episode, there are so many starfish to be saved, and every single one you are saving makes a difference. So don't hesitate, start making a difference, and others will follow. And with that, we thank you for listening to our episode about some of the most pressing environmental issues today. If you're interested in finding out more about the International Master in Adult Education for Social Change that we're all doing here, which we also call the IMASC, please go to www.gla.ac.uk. And to follow the journey of the third cohort of IMASC, visit our blog at IMASC, that is IMASC-unmasked.squarespace.com. Have a lovely day and stay tuned for the next episode.